At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Hey, it is Ryan Seacrest here. Want to bring a little Hollywood excitement to your day? Take a few spins with Chumba Casino's brand new game, Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways. It's free and features 10,000 ways to play, giving you nonstop action, including thrilling bonus respins and cascading reels. Every spin brings something new, so step into the spotlight. Enjoy the excitement and play today at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and David Janes here with you. The Predators are back in action tonight at the New Jersey Devils. Puck drop at 6, pregame at 5 right here on 102.5 The Game. So let's go to our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL insider, who is presented each week by Old National Bank. Get old. Hi, Elliot. How are you?
I'm old. How are you guys?
We're doing well, trying to stay warm down here in frigid Nashville. So the Predators play the Devils tonight, but I want to ask you first about the Predators' previous opponent, the Boston Bruins, because I was thinking about something as I was watching the game between the teams the other night. Last season, the Bruins were big sellers at the trade deadline, shipping out Brad Marchand, Brandon Carlo, Charlie Coyle, others. How were they able to rebound so quickly this season after shedding so many top players? And what could the Predators perhaps learn from what the Bruins did last year as they approached the trade deadline?
Well, I think one of the things that happened last year was, number one, Jeremy Swayman, their goalie, was just coming off a brutal contract dispute. And he didn't show up until right around, well, it was during training camp, and he just never recovered. That was one of the big sources of their issues. It would be as if, for the Predators, Saros had a contract dispute that dragged into training camp, and he was just never okay all year. And, he, you know, this year, Swayman came back. He was focused. He was ready. And he's had a great year. That's one key thing. They had some bad injuries on the blue line. McAvoy and Lindholm, two of their best defensemen, got hurt. McAvoy didn't play again after being at the Four Nations, where he got hurt, and that really took them down. And I think that those were a lot of the reasons that they had issues. And, you know, I think guys had bad years. Like, all of that stuff combined together. This year, Swayman focused on hockey. Zadorov has had a really good year after a really rocky first season. They're healthier. But I think one of the things that they also did, Adam, was that when they made trades last year, they got young players who were ready to play in the NHL. They didn't just get picks and prospects. And if you take a look at the depth of their roster, like, they have players there like Fraser Minton, who they got from the Toronto Maple Leafs, and Murat Husseinov, who they got from Minnesota, who were maybe guys who weren't either in their previous team's lineups. Maybe their previous team didn't think as highly of them. Maybe they were squeezed out. But they, when they got traded there, they found roles. And their players in Boston. Like, for example, I'll give you another example. They have a guy who was in the American Hockey League for Toronto named Alex Steeves. He was a really good AHL player, but the Maple Leafs never really thought that he was a fit for them. And Boston signed him, and now he's playing a role for them as one of their forwards. They just signed a 2-year extension. And Adam, I one of the things I really find in this league is that pro scouting really matters. Who is a guy who is not fitting in another organization who can fit in with you? Like, who are those guys? Who can you find that's not fitting in elsewhere? And suddenly he comes to your team and he becomes a factor. And that's one of the things that Boston did. They found guys.
Regarding young players who could fit in with other organizations, Elliot, there is one player rumored to be available who could fit that criteria, and that's Shane Wright, the 22-year-old center from Seattle, the number 4 overall pick in 2022. Why is he seemingly on the outs in Seattle, and what could the Kraken want in a trade for Wright?
Well, I'll answer the second part first, Adam. They're looking to hit a home run. If they're trading him, they want to hit a home run. Seattle has never had a game breaker. They've never had an elite offensive player. You know, for example, just for argument's sake, I think if Artemi Panarin was interested in the Kraken, and I don't believe he is, but I'm just putting it out there, that is the kind of player that I think Seattle would trade Shane Wright for. But they want an offensive player that makes a difference. They are looking to hit a home run there. That's what they're looking for. The thing about Wright is, you know, he's like the third line center there at best. He is hitting he plays, you know, 14, 15 minutes a night in his best nights most times. He had a game last week where he played 9 up. And I think, you know, Adam, another thing we're learning about this league right now is the NHL was always the kind of everybody bends to the conformity of the team league, like guys who didn't really stuck out. And I'm not saying that Wright's a bad guy or he doesn't bend to the conformity of the team, but I do think that when young players now aren't happy with their situations, they're much quicker to act on it than they ever were in the NHL. Like, we've had 3 players this year, Adam, terminate their contracts to go play other places for less money. Now, one of them who went to Montreal, he just got a new contract, so it worked out for him. But other players are doing this now. When players are not happy, they're speaking up and forcing their way out more than others, or more than ever. And that's one thing that's happening with Wright.
Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL Insider, is with us. Elliot, of course, we're paying attention specifically to the Western Conference wildcard race, because that's where the Predators are in the standings. Which teams do you believe will start separating themselves from that pack? Utah appears to be doing so, but is there anybody else you think in that group, Anaheim, San Jose, LA, Seattle, that is primed to pull away?
You know, I think the challenge that you guys have in your division is that you only have one route, right? You know, like nobody who's in like Utah and the other teams in your division, like if you want to count Chicago and all this, nobody's catching the top 3 teams. Colorado, Minnesota, Dallas, they're way, way, way too far. It's like I used to play when I was a kid a video game called Pole Position. You aren't catching those teams in pole position. But in the Pacific, you know, because those teams are lower in total points, the teams in that division will have 2 routes. They'll have the wild card and they'll have the division. I think Anaheim is going to make it. I think Utah is going to make it. Utah's played more games than, you know, the Kings or the Sharks or yourselves or Seattle. I just like their team. I think they play fast. I like their goaltending. I like Anaheim and I like Utah. You know, the rest of the teams, I would like to see this. If it's not going to be my adopted hometown of Nashville, Adam, I'm going to take San Jose. I'd like to see them make the playoffs. I'd like to see Celebrini make the playoffs. He's the best player on those three teams. I'd love to see him in big games. I think Anaheim gets in. I think Utah gets in. And I'll take the Sharks because I want to see Celebrini get in.
We're talking to Elliot Friedman. Elliot, greetings from New Jersey here as we looked on from the Rock, as they like to call it. And I want to ask you about, you just talked about the West, so why don't you hit the East? Because as I look at the standings, for the first time in a good while, there is a little bit of separation.
There's separation.
So you've got some teams that have fallen back by, 5 to 8 points to where it might be a little tougher than it seemed a few weeks ago to catch a Montreal or a Boston teams that have a stranglehold on the Wildcats, wildcard spots right now. So how do you think that affects the market as we look ahead?
I think the interesting one's going to be Washington, because I think Washington's in on Panarin, but it has to be with an extension. Like, if you look at Washington right now, they're 6 points out. They're actually closer to third place in their division than they are in the wild card. They're 8 out of the wild card. And I think Washington's a really good team, and I think they would look at Panarin with an extension. So that is one for me. Other than that, you know, about Panarin with the Panthers, I think they're his number one choice. I think that's where he really wants to go. I just have no idea of how the Panthers can make that work. And then the other teams, it's just a matter of, do they become sellers or not? Do they hang on or do they sell? I mean, it's a nightmare. It's really tough for New Jersey. Like, the team you're playing tonight, as disappointing as your start kind of was, like, their season, they started 13-4-1, and they're in 15th place in the 16-team Eastern Conference. Like, this is a really hard year for them. This is a year they were supposed to take a step. And I think that a lot of these teams have big decisions to make. Big decisions to make about whether or not they wave the white flag or they go for it.
Here's another one that I'm sure is hard for anybody to answer, but you would have really good perspective on this. You were just talking about sometimes, you know, you got players that want to change the scenery. You've got other times where you get that right guy changing addresses and he fits really well in the next spot. You've got such a shortage of centers around right now. They sent Fedor Svechkov back down to Milwaukee, and I'm sure he's very disappointed for that to happen, but he just has not been super productive. And now you've got another guy in a mix of players that this happens to all teams, several players, even high round picks. They sort of hit a crossroads and you're not, and you start to wonder how much longer they have in a particular spot. So that dynamic across the lead, Elliot, I think it's an interesting one to follow because some come out of it, they grow out of it, and then others don't.
I agree with that. You can look, like, there's players that were top picks that will never do it because they can't adjust to a different role. And you'll have other players that were high picks and they accept that, you know what, maybe my ceiling is not where I thought it was, but it is where I can find another role. Like, I can be a third line winger instead of a top scorer. And they accept that they have a bit of a different role. And I think that, you know, I'll give you an example of a guy on your team who I think about with that is McCarron. You know what? McCarron was a first round pick and he was drafted by Montreal. And, you know, he was a guy that people were wondering, when you're a first round pick and you're drafted by Montreal, people are expecting just enormous things from you. And I know he was the 25th overall pick. He's not necessarily a first rounder, not like a guy who's in the top five or anything. But anytime you're taken in the first round by the Montreal Canadiens, people are like putting you on a pedestal. Like, this is a star. This is a cornerstone. And it didn't work out for him in that way. But I watch McCarron play now and the role that he's accepted, and he's a player. Like, if on a good team, like, good teams need players like him. And he accepts it, and he does it, and he's carved out a role. And, you know, like, I listened to Barry the other day, and I know a lot of the focus is on guys like O'Reilly, and I understand that because they're the sexiest names. But I would bet you that he's got teams calling him about McCarron. What are you doing here with this guy? Because to win a Stanley Cup, you need guys like him and guys who are willing to do the role that he does. So, you know, obviously when we're talking about Nashville, you guys are wanting to hear about the big names. I would bet you that that's one guy that Trotz knows he can deal if he wants to. And he's probably thinking about it. Do I want to keep him? Or am I getting something here that I like? I have to say, I'd probably bet you too, like, another guy like that is Bunting. The Islanders traded for Palat the other day, Andre Palat from New Jersey, where you are. I think they poked around on your guy Bunting. And again, I think Bunting is a guy who can play a little higher in the lineup. He has, and he has with you. He's a pain in the butt, and I say that as a compliment, and I would bet that Barry's getting calls on him too.
It's a great thought, and I want to ask you specifically about that dilemma when it comes to centers, because it's so hard to find centers. As soon as you trade somebody like McCarron or even an Eric Halla, who's done a very nice job, could probably be a nice fit. He's been that guy for many teams before. He's one of the more well-traveled guys. So when you're looking at your pipeline and you don't have – maybe Brady Martin needs another year or two, things like that, how do you weigh the dilemma of trading a guy you know you could get some pretty good assets for, but as soon as you trade him, you got to look for somebody that's similar, and those guys are hard to find?
Well, I think one of the things would be for Trotz is, you know, he's had – how long have you guys been looking for centers? So he's –
forever.
It's a great point you make, Willie. He's not going to want to create himself another issue. I would say this. I think oftentimes it comes down to what is the player looking for in terms of an extension. It usually comes down to, does somebody force you to make a decision? Do you get an ask for an extension that you're like, we're not doing that? And then when you negotiate, you sit there and you say, you know what, we don't have a path to a deal here. So that's one. And the other is, okay, what do I think I can get for McCarron? Okay. And these teams, you have an analytics staff, and they'll tell you, over the past couple years, this is what a comparable to McCarron was getting in a trade. So generally, you set that as the baseline. As in, yep. Let's just say, for argument's sake, it's a second-round pick. Let's just say that. Well, if we get a second-round pick for McCarron, we got to look at it. And then all of a sudden, if somebody says, you know what, I absolutely have to have this guy, I'm giving you a first, then all of a sudden you're sitting there and you're saying, you know what, we may not get an offer this good. So I think what it comes down to, Willie, if it's either the ask or in terms of salary or the trade return, does somebody force you to make a decision?
Elliot, before we let you go, I am curious about Nazem Kadri. Because as we talk about Ryan O'Reilly and what he could be worth on the trade market, if the Flames move on from Kadri, I think that could provide a blueprint of sorts for Barry Trotz. Now, I know that Kadri has more term on his contract. He's more expensive than Ryan O'Reilly, but they're roughly the same age. So I'm just curious what you're hearing about what it would take to pry Kadri out of Calgary.
I think it's a couple of things. Number one, the challenge I think for Nashville is the reason, like, Kadri likes Calgary per se. Like, he played his 1,000th game this year, Adam, and he told people, like, they threw a big party for him after in his ceremony, as they always do. You guys just had it with Yossi, and they did a big party for him. And Kadri told them, like, you know, I really appreciate what you guys did here for me. And as a matter of fact, I think as a result, it took longer for his willingness to be traded to get out because he was so appreciative. I think Calgary's always known that it could come to this. The thing is, like, they really think, like, they'll do it, Adam. They'll trade him. I think that it would cost a good young player or two, like a draft pick. Like, if you had a good prospect and a good young player, or a good young player, or a reasonably high draft pick, I think Calgary would do it. I think the problem for the Predators doing it is, if you can't convince him that you're going to be better, like a Stanley Cup contender, I don't know how happy he's going to be.
Elliot Freeman has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donicky joins us every Thursday during hockey season, and he is presented by Old National Bank. Get old. Elliot, great stuff as always. We'll catch up next week.
Where's D-Mace today? Is it like a post-Christmas vacation?
No,
I'm right here. I had a question for you. It wasn't really related. I guess it was related to hockey in a sense, but yeah. You know, I didn't know if you...
Go ahead.
Well, here's my question. And Lou, I know you heard about the Bill Belichick snubbing and everybody's in uproar. Has that... Yeah. Because I don't know how hockey does their Hall of Fame and, you know, votes and all that. Has there been a situation where everyone felt this person was a first ballot and they didn't get in? And was it such an uproar like this?
The Belichick
question. What? I'll give you, you know, it's a great question, D-Mace, and I'll tell you the one that it's not exact, but it is similar. So hockey has a committee, and there's 18 people on the committee. And I'll say this, there's like retired players. I think there's a couple media members there. There's a couple women on the panel. Like, it's a qualified panel. Mm-hmm. The people there are more than qualified to judge, as far as I'm concerned, who deserves to be in the Hall of Fame or not. But it's a secret ballot, and it's mysterious. And, you know, and the other thing, too, is it's not obvious. Like, somebody on the panel has to nominate a person to go in the Hall of Fame, and then they have to vote in to accept him or her. And we don't even know oftentimes who gets nominated. So it's like things like this happen all the time. I remember the one that really upset a lot of people, Derek, was years ago. There was a coach by the name of Pat Burns, and he got sick. He had cancer. And there were people who wanted him to get in before he died, and he didn't. And then 4 years after he died, in 2014, they put him in. And I remember that was one that really upset people. They were like, you were going to put him in. You knew you were going to put him in. How come you didn't do it while he was still alive? I remember that. That was one that I remember people being as angry as I can remember.
Derek, next time throw something at me if you want to ask a question. That was
a good question. You know, y'all had the hockey questions, so
that was a good question. Elliot, thank you so much. We'll catch up next week.
All right, guys. Take care. Have a great week.
Yep, you too.
615-737-1025. Great stuff, as always, from our friend Elliot Freeman. Your reaction, 615-737-1025. We'll also get Willie's opinion on what he heard from Robert Saleh today. We'll do that next. 615-737-1025. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service.
Been reported that this was the team that you circled that you wanted to be the head coach of. Obviously, there have been some tough times here the last couple of years. What was it about this team that you were willing to stake your coaching future on it?
Shamelessly, I probably did as much research on this organization and the people, the leadership committee in this organization, than they probably did on me. And did a ton of research on everything I could in terms of from top all the way down. And what I found is that the people here are unbelievable. And getting a chance to meet everybody in person just was an affirmation to what I had already heard. And I'm a firm believer that people win championships. And this organization is built to win a championship because of the people, from obviously Miss Amy all the way down, the people here are unbelievable. And so that first and foremost is what drew me close to this organization.
That was Robert Saleh at his introductory news conference earlier this afternoon. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Willie, Derek and I reacted to Robert Saleh's news conference in the first hour. You weren't a part of it, so I want to hear what your reaction is. What did you like from Robert Saleh's news conference?
I think he came across the way we thought that he would. And, of course, you know, we have to be wary about the, quote, winning the press conference.
But that phrase has been banned on the program.
Good.
Yes.
It's been banned.
Yes.
I think that's a smart move. But I do think he exhibited the presence that you were hoping you were going to see. And that is what everybody seemed to be preaching about him, is they were impressed with his ability to do that. It looks like he has the skill set to connect everybody in the building and just have that better leadership quality that maybe has been missing the last couple years, right, since they lost Mike Vrabel, who I don't know if he connected the whole building, but certainly Vrabel had the leadership skills that have been vacant the last couple years. So I don't know. I like what I heard. I don't think it's good to overreact or over-speculate, but I do feel like they have a really good sense of where they want to go from here, that there's a plan in place and they're ready to go for it. It seems like it's more sellable.
Victor from Nashville on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, D-Mace makes a good point on calling plays and why Callahan didn't have the oomph and energy. He could call some plays to start some games, but wouldn't adjust throughout. Saleh has shown he can adjust and is willing to change the plan when things aren't working. And Willie, this stems from Robert Saleh. We've talked about this before, but Robert Saleh said today at the news conference, of course, that he is going to call defensive plays because if he feels it makes him more engaged in the game, he wishes he had done it in New York. He's going to do it here. And Derek made a really good point before we had Elliot Freeman on, that that's maybe why, or part of the reason why, Brian Callahan failed here, because he hadn't had that experience of calling plays and feeling what it felt like to have, you know, the outcome of a game hinge on what you're calling into the headset.
Yeah, I thought that was a noteworthy part of the press conference. I because it dawns on me, you know, he hasn't done it as a head coach. And he was talking about when he wasn't doing it for the Jets, he felt like he wasn't as connected to the game. But there is that management side, that game management side that you have to be tuned into, or you have to have some really good people around you helping you tuned into that part. So hopefully that will fall into line. But his credentials as a proven defensive coordinator, I think, supersede everything. I think I'm glad that he's going to be calling the plays, and I'm gonna believe that he'll be able to manage that part of it.
I brought up the situation that Kansas City has Willie with Spagnuolo and Andy Reid, where Andy takes care of the play calling, and he handles that, but he trusts in Spagnuolo to call his defense based upon what we're doing offensively. So we're sort of working together, because if I'm an offensive guy, I know what my defense is capable of doing, and I know how far I can push this, or I know certain times of the game where I may need to run the ball a little bit, get those guys a little breather. And on defensive side of the ball, then they know exactly from an offensive side what you want to do, what you want to think. So they're calling their defense sometimes based upon that.
I think that also makes sense with what they're doing. Can we use the Vrabel term complimentary football? I think without saying that's what he was talking about.
Did we ban that phrase?
I don't know if that's been banned, but I do want to give a shout out to Robert Saleh for basically saying the ball doesn't bounce
your
way.
Yes, he did say that.
He did use the word oblong to describe the football, which I liked. But when I heard that phrase, I was like, Rob, Can I call you Rob or is it Bob? Rob, Bob, what can I call you? Maybe don't make comments about the balls bouncing certain ways in Nashville. It's a touchy subject. But I don't think complimentary football has been banned on the program. But if you say it enough, it will be.
I think we might. But I think that will be key if you're going to do it that way, where you basically turn the reins over to Daboll for offense. And the other thing I thought jumped out to me was his description of Daboll's offense. Mm-hmm. And I'd never heard it put this way, where he was talking about the Shanahan family tree, which includes a lot of other subsets, dominates 80 to 90% of the league, he said. And so it's easier to prepare for those teams because you see so many of them, but Daboll doesn't come from that. So that maybe is a slight advantage going in. Time will tell.
It does sound like, Derek, to your point mm-hmm. about Reed and Spagnuolo in Kansas City, that Brian Daboll is going to have full autonomy mm-hmm. over the offense. Not that Robert Saleh won't have input on what goes on. He is the head coach, after all. But it sounds like Brian Daboll is going to really be the offensive head coach versus just the offensive coordinator.
Yeah, because you never really see Andy. I know he's probably talking through the headphones, but you never really see him and Spags like, together. They're doing their it's like two teams connected mm-hmm. in one, meaning offense and the defense, and they work well together. So I don't have to oversee. Only thing I got to say is, hey coach, we may be headed into 2 minute, so or 4 minute offense. We got to head into our 4 minute offense. So if you know, just make note of that. So the plays we're going to call, we're going to slow the game down for you, try to, you know, milk the clock. And so now the defense understands what he's doing, and they can base their calls. If indeed, you know, you don't waste a whole 4 minutes, they could make their calls based upon that, knowing that they may have, you know, to sort of, you know, defend a minute on a clock. So that's complimentary. I said it again, so that's twice in one show, or maybe three times. But that is that type of football that I think Kansas City does it well, and that's where the Titans hope to get to.
Here's a ringing endorsement of Robert Saleh from our friend Paul Kaharsky. Quote, Robert Saleh was terrific in an informal lunch setting at his introductory press conference and a spillover with print media. Commanding, informative, confident, going to be an excellent face of the franchise. It will all come down, of course, to whether he and his staff can develop players and winning plans with people Mike Borgonzi and the scouting staff deliver him with input. Also, happy birthday, Paul Kaharsky. I just saw that. It's your birthday. Hey. Happy birthday,
Paul. Happy birthday, Paul.
That sounds like somebody who thought Robert Saleh won the news conference.
Ah, Paul got a nice birthday present, huh?
You just used the band phrase.
Saleh gave, and then Saleh called him by his name. He was like, Paul, right?
Yes.
So, there you go.
A little personal touch yeah. as well. 615-737-1025. Oh, before I forget, one programming note. Earlier today, the SEC announced that Saturday's game between Vanderbilt men's basketball and Ole Miss will now take place at Memorial Gym. It was supposed to take place in Oxford this weekend, mm-hmm. but the teams have flipped their home and home, so they will play here at 5 o'clock. Derek, you told me that
it's
Ole
bad.
Miss is
it's bad,
it's bad right yeah, now with yeah. the weather and stuff.
They may have it may, because the I guess, you know, it sounds so small, they may have gotten hit worse than we did, at least in that area. So I know a lot of things are out down there.
So the game between Vanderbilt and Ole Miss will now take place here at Memorial Gym, 5 p.m. Saturday. All season single game and mini plan tickets previously purchased for the game on March 4th will be valid on Saturday in case you have tickets for the game. 615-737-1025 will continue to take your reaction to Robert Saleh's new news conference. Plus, the big story in the NFL the past couple of days, Bill Belichick, not a first ballot Hall of Famer. We have heard from one Hall of Fame voter who explained why he didn't vote for Bill Belichick. We'll bring that to you next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025 The Game. Predators pregame coming up at the top of the hour. Predators versus Devils tonight in Newark, New Jersey. Puck drop at 6, as I just said. Pregame at 5. As always, right here on 102.5 The Game. And Derek, I just want to say I'm pretty excited about something. So every Friday on the show, the three of us rotate the DJ role. Mm-hmm. You did it last week. You came hard with some awesome tunes.
Let's go.
It's my turn tomorrow.
Yes.
And I already know what the theme is going to be.
Okay.
And I think it's going to tug at your heartstrings because I know that you, like me, have a soft spot for a certain era of cartoons.
Okay.
So that's what we're doing tomorrow.
Oh.
That's what we're doing tomorrow.
Okay.
I've got the selections. I'll send them to David tomorrow, but
can't wait to hear this.
It's going to be good. It's going to be good. Lenny on our text line reacting to a clip we played from Robert Saleh says, little butt kissing there, Robert. Well, Lenny, what do you expect Robert Saleh to do? Like, man, I didn't really want this job. They gave me so much money, I couldn't say no. So I'm here and, you know, whatever. Great. But no, I understand.
It's a part of the process.
Yes.
You know?
You got to kiss a little butt. You got
to
do it.
To move on up.
Yes, you got to kiss a little butt.
It didn't rhyme, I know, no. But I just kind of threw that in.
That surely won't be clipped and played on this station. I mean, I've said more embarrassing things on the air than that, so... I've said more embarrassing things on the air than that. But
I do not prescribe to that.
Speaking of embarrassing things, Bill Belichick isn't a first ballot Hall of Famer. Some of you may not think that's embarrassing. A lot of people seem to think that's embarrassing. Derek Mason made his point loud and clear yesterday that Bill Belichick is getting what's coming to him for cheating.
Yeah.
But we've been waiting for an explanation from the voters who did not put Bill Belichick on their ballots. And we actually did hear from one yesterday. Vahe Gregorian is a columnist for the Kansas City Star. And he wrote a column explaining why he didn't vote for Bill Belichick to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. And as he explained, it had nothing to do with Spygate or Deflategate or any other controversy. He simply gave his votes to the senior candidates who may not get another opportunity to make it into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. His argument was Bill Belichick is going to get into the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. It is inevitable, whether it happens this year, next year, the year after that. But Gregorian wanted to make sure that he cast his votes for players who may not have another opportunity to get in. So that was his explanation. Your reaction, I will pull up his column and read from a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, one, this guy felt, you know, I guess in his own sort of world, the pressure of people wanting to know names, you know, and he came out and, hey, listen, this is why I, you know, didn't vote for them. It had nothing to do with, you know, what went on, you know, to cheat the game, you know, on the field. It had more to do with the guys that, you know, are on the panel. And, you know, this may be their last chance to get in, you know. So whether I would rather do that than vote for a guy that I know will get in. These guys may not have a chance, so I am going to put my vote behind these guys because I want these guys to get in, and that's cool. And again, I just don't understand why people can't rationalize that. That okay, he didn't get in the first year, so what? But he's going to get in next year. He's going to get in next year. And if he don't get in next year, he will get in. He will get in eventually. You know how many guys have waited to get in the Hall of Fame? You know, and some still aren't there. And some finally just made it. So if, excuse me to think that maybe, you know, waiting 1 year, possibly two, isn't such a big thing when guys that should have been categorically Hall of Famers are either not in, Jimmy Smith, Henry Ellard, or guys that takes a couple of years, Terrell Owens, guys like that, you know, so... Just because he has to wait a year or two, then it's fine, man. I don't see anything. He shouldn't have disrespected the game the way he did.
So Vahe Gregorian, columnist for the Kansas City Star, who did not vote for Bill Belichick, said he voted for the three senior candidates, Ken Anderson, Roger Craig, and L.C. Greenwood. Here is part of what Gregorian wrote at the Kansas City Star. Quote, "Each of those men, in my opinion, unequivocally belongs in Canton. Among dozens of at least semi-similarly decorated players who have been relegated to what Pro Football Hall of Fame voters have come to call the abyss of senior candidates. Despite 10 senior players, along with three contributors and two coaches, being inducted in 2020 as part of the NFL 100 celebration, the senior backlog remains so overwhelming, including approximately 61-time all-decade players, that any chance to climb out is fleeting and fraught." He continues, "All of that went into why I felt duty-bound to vote for the richly deserving seniors who most likely won't ever have a hearing again as more senior candidates enter the pool and fresh cases get made for others. Meanwhile, Belichick is inevitable soon, as he should be. At the risk of contradicting my own vote, really, he shouldn't even have to wait. I understand why people are offended that he isn't going in the first moment he can. In the end, though, I feel more compelled by what I perceive to be last chances and looming lost causes within the system as we have it, a system I hope the Hall will see fit to change now."
Don't people, because in particular, like, let's just say Roger Craig, because I didn't see L.C. Greenwood play, but I did watch Roger Craig play. Roger Craig was one of the first sort of dual back running backs out there, 1,000 yards rushing, 1,000 yards receiving. The way that San Francisco offense flowed, he had a key part in them winning Super Bowls, along with obviously Jerry Rice, Joe Montana, John Taylor, those people. But Roger Craig, what he was able to do, that's another guy should have been in a long time ago. But, you know, they had to wait, and hopefully they will get in. But to sit here and be in an uproar because Bill Belichick has to wait a year, maybe two, you're missing a point. Like, he cheated inside the game. Again, I'm going to say it for you again. He cheated inside the game. And there's no way you can try to wiggle yourself out of it. Like, no, he cheated inside of the game. And they don't know how far it went back. Because why? Because they destroyed everything. So if he has to wait a year or two, why? It's just like, what? How does that change your life? It'll change Bill's life, but how does that change your life when you're sitting up here in the uproar because he has to? It's not like they're saying you're never going to get in. They're just saying, hey, you may have to wait a year or two.
A couple of texters. Craig says, "That's how a Hall of Fame gets watered down. What if everyone thought, oh, I'm not going to vote for them because they'll get in eventually? You should vote for the most deserving, point blank, period." One texter says, "Vince Lombardi was not a first ballot Hall of Famer. He won five NFL championships without Tom Brady." Another texter says, "Everybody is boohoo about Belichick not getting into the Hall of Fame on the first ballot. Where is all the uproar and everything about Ed Too Tall Jones still not being in the Hall of Fame?"
See, stuff like that. We can go down a list of guys that put in the work that were exceptional players. Because I don't want to hear this, oh, the Hall of Fame is not the Hall of Good. Yeah, it is, because there are some people that are in there that are just good, okay? There are. But they were put in there, why? For a reason. Whatever reason they chose to put them in there, they put them in there. So to say that some of the people that are on this list, they may have this their last chance, to say, well, that's the reason why the Hall is the – no, that ain't the reason. This didn't start just the last couple of years where – there's been this discrepancy. It's just now it's more so on the forefront now. Now it's a part of sports. Because the Hall of Fame, it wasn't really a part of sports like that years ago, talking about it and made these compare. It wasn't until sort of this social media explosion where everything became more accessible and attainable and everything else. And now the voting has become this huge, which it should be, but the voting has become this huge thing now. And if a guy don't get in, it's like, oh my goodness, why? Or if a guy you do get in, what, he doesn't deserve to be in. It's like, what do you mean? We can argue about a few things, like stat-wise, and say their stats look different than others. But if a guy played X amount of years, put in work, not just from a stat standpoint, but mentally and physically, and to say, and they're on it's like teetering whether they're a Hall of Famer or not, to say they don't deserve it, it's like, man, do you know how much work they put in? And they put in damn good work. Guys like Jimmy Smith, guys like Henry Eller, guys like not Isaac Bruce, because Isaac Bruce is already in.
Torrey Holt.
I think Torrey may be in, or he's a finalist. But guys like Torrey Holt, where Andre Johnson got in right away, and Torrey Holt still had to wait.
Torrey Holt is not a Hall of Famer.
And Torrey Holt, and not to say that Dre doesn't deserve to be in, because he did. But Torrey Holt retired before Dre. And Torrey Holt has the numbers. I can go and get the numbers and recite them for you. But he's still not in. But no one's making an uproar about that.
That'll do it for us today. Predators take on the Devils tonight. Puck drop at 6. Pre-game coming up in just a few moments. The Predators have lost 4 of 5. They will look to end that funk tonight against the Devils. We will be back tomorrow, full show tomorrow at 3 p.m. Stay safe, stay warm, be neighborly. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 3.
Be loved, love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, and wonderful day. I love you. The team love you. You hear that music. Don't you forget about us, because we will definitely not forget about you. Back to our main hours, 3 to 6 tomorrow, because Adam will be bringing the funk. I know he will with the music. So peace, and I love you.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything. But today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car look in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.